So first of all, let me give you a warm introduction. Your generosity with these calls is just astounding. I believe this must be the seventh or maybe even the eighth call that you've conducted, and each one gets better than the previous one, and we continue to receive just wonderful feedback on the incredible, valuable information that you share on these calls. So, you know, I've introduced you numerous times. People, I think, are largely familiar with all the wonderful work you've done for homeopathy, the books you've written, the wonderful classes you've taught, the incredible scholarship that you bring to homeopathy. I mean, there's just so much that you contribute, and now you've taken a month out of your very busy schedule and busy life to go and do service in Sri Lanka, and so thank you so much for taking the time to join us and share that incredible experience with us. Yeah, so before we actually get started, let me just make a couple of announcements. First of all, Dr. Luke will be offering a seminar in Albuquerque, New Mexico, entitled Beyond Jung, Dreams, Delusions, and Neurosis, a Homeopathic Approach to the Similimum, and this will have daily live cases. Now, this seminar is going to be on between August 17th through the 21st. That's a Wednesday through a Sunday. And if you want more information about that seminar, this is a five-day seminar, you'll want to contact Dr. Luke at Dr. Luke, that's D-R-L-U-C, at CyberMesa.com. So I'll repeat that again. It's Dr. Luke, D-R-L-U-C, at CyberMesa. And Cyber is CyberMesa.com. And I can tell you, I actually did attend, I don't know if it's exactly the same as this particular course, but I did attend a seminar that Dr. Luke offered on this type of subject, on dreams and Jung's work and how it relates to homeopathy. And I can tell you it was an absolutely phenomenal seminar, and not only interesting in terms of the theoretical aspect, but had really tremendous practical value in terms of being able to use this information to increase your success in homeopathic practice. So I can't recommend this seminar highly enough. Again, it's in Albuquerque, New Mexico, from August 17th through the 21st, and if you want more information, you can contact him, Dr. Luke, at Dr. Luke at CyberMesa.com. In addition, Dr. Luke will be in Ottawa between May 21st and 22nd for a seminar titled Questions and Answers to Resolve Even the Most Difficult Cases in Management. And this, again, will be an excellent seminar. All of Dr. Luke's seminars are fantastic. And if you want more information on that seminar, you can contact Liz Henderson, the director of the British Institute of Homeopathy in Canada, and you can call her at 613-749-9762. That's 613-749-9762, or you can visit their website at www.bihcanada, that's Boy Iguana Harry Canada.com. Also, for those of you who are interested in acquiring any of Dr. Luke's books, we do have a 22% discount sale that's expiring on April 15th. So if you're interested in getting any of these titles, you can acquire them at a 22% discount until the 15th of April. You can contact Allison Burden at Whole Health Now Books. The toll-free number is 866-599-5950. That's 866-599-5950. Again, all of the titles are 22% off. Dr. Luke has written incredible books. His last one, Achieving and Maintaining Similimum, in my opinion, is probably the single most important book on homeopathic case management that we have, and should be really a textbook for almost for that particular aspect of homeopathic practice, and I think every school should be using it as a textbook. It is just a tremendous, tremendous work and really belongs in the library of every serious student or practitioner of homeopathy. So, Dr. Luke, thank you again for taking the time out of your busy schedule and joining us. Again, it's greatly appreciated.
Thanks, Ken. I'm not counting. I'm always enjoying it.
Okay. All right. Well, Dr. Luke, you had suggested that we have a teleconference call after you returned back from Sri Lanka to talk a little bit about your trip, and I thought that was a wonderful suggestion. I was curious, how did you decide to go to Sri Lanka in the first place? I mean, how did that process occur?
Well, first of all, I'm pretty impulsive. That's one of my bad characteristics. And so whenever this happened, of course, we all remember the tragedy on 26th of December. You know, my first thought was immediately, and I'm sure it wasn't just my thought, it was probably in the mind of many homeopaths, we should be there. Of course, we should be there. It's not that easy for me because I'm always full booked a year in advance. But lo and behold, through just a chance, at the month of March, I actually had free. Basically, I had that set aside because I wanted to work some of my new book that I'm working on, and of course to prepare many of my upcoming seminars. But anyway, that I guess that has to take care of another time. And of course, I'm married to somebody who wants me to go to anywhere in the world. You know, when an elephant has a trunk disease in Africa somewhere, Yolanda, my wife, is always saying right away, "You should be there. Take the airplane." So you know, it's not that difficult for both of us since we are pretty much oriented to not basically being crusade, but really wanted to bring homeopathy wherever we can, because I think whatever tragedy occurs in this world, it is actually a fantastic opportunity for homeopathy to go and show what it can do with such a little, you know, with little things that we take along, just one little kit, and yet we can actually encounter and treat anything what we want. So for me, that always stands up, you know, in front of anything that I want to do. And I actually have never really regretted doing so. And after a trip to South Africa and Kenya, to me it sounded like an easier trip, you know, safety-wise at least, I would say. So I guess I jumped at the occasion, especially when one of my students over my Rich Who group told me, "Hey, Dr. Luke, you should go." I say, "Yes, why not?" So I guess I did it. And I never regretted it. It's not that, you know, and I just want to share some of the things with you.
Now, Luke, you know, most of us, you know, who've watched the news or whatever have seen some of the pictures over there, but I'm sure unless you've actually been there, it's really hard to get a sense of what the situation is over there. Can you give us a sense of what's actually going on from a firsthand experience?
Well, it is, indeed, it's, you know, when you haven't been there, it's hard to imagine. But, you know, first of all, we know that this tsunami probably killed about 80,000 people in Sri Lanka alone, and the extent of the victim's suffering can never truly be appreciated, I think. You know, again, too, I was there about 3 months following the disaster, and it's just still hard to comprehend the immensity of what had happened, and the destruction to seen on the roadside is probably only a glimpse, I would say, of what had to be endured by these kind of people. I was, you know, again, I landed in Colombo, which is the capital of Sri Lanka, and actually was brought by, you know, a wonderful man, you know, Joe de Oliveira, who is really the greatest contact for us homeopaths without borders in Sri Lanka. And he brought me about 3 hours together with George, my friend George, to 2 hours, 3 hours south of Colombo to the area in the west coast that was most hit by the tsunami. Now, mind you, the worst hit site was probably the east coast, but unfortunately because of the political unrest, you know, between the Tigers, the Tamil Tigers and the government, there's certainly not any government-sponsored or Red Cross or anybody, homeopaths without borders or doctors without borders, isn't really going into that area, which is kind of sad to know that, you know, there is so much to do there, but basically it's certainly unsafe for us to go. Nevertheless, though, where we went, which is about 3 hours south of Colombo, we went there to the area where, you know, you might have seen all the pictures of that train that was derailed and that was taken by the tsunami. And in fact, that particular place, the Peralia camp, is probably, you know, where the train was dislodged by this tsunami. It's probably the most single greatest tragedy all over the world with this tsunami. I mean, there was about more than 2,000 victims that were crushed to death in this particular single incident. It was easy to comprehend. You know, the train runs along the coast totally from Colombo all the way down to Galle, where we also were, another big city. And the first wave was probably about 8 feet in height, which wasn't really as destructive. It's high enough if you imagine what 8 feet means. And basically the waves did not, you know, pull back. The water didn't pull back for at least 30 minutes. So it gives you an idea what really was going on. Now, with the first wave, many people climbed on that train just to be safe, you know, because they thought if anything happens. But the second wave was about 30 feet. And took, you know, was such a force that it took the train and just tossed it around like a, you know, a sardine case, you know, and so 2,000 people were killed right then and there. It's also amazing to see when you look at the strength of these waves, it must have been horrible. I mean, 50, 60 miles an hour, 30 feet high, many, many houses along the coast were absolutely, totally destroyed until the foundation, by the way. Nothing was standing right. And then, amazingly enough, some houses are just saved right next to the ones that were destroyed. It's just an incomprehensible thing when you see it. So, again, too, the boulders that were more than half a ton or more were deposited about 100 yards inland by the second wave of the 30 feet. It gives you an idea of that sheer power of that second tsunami wave, which toppled that train, and really destroyed quite a bit of the villages right along that particularly coastline. So, unfortunately, 3 months later when I come there, what I see is that many, many people really still are in tents, you know, who were mainly offered by I see the Hollanders, the Britons, you know, Great Britain, and then little houses, little wooden houses were built by communities from the Nordic communities. They are always good at woodwork, as you know, the Finns, the Nordic people there, the Finland, Sweden. They were pretty well presented there. But, you know, when you look at the little houses, what they built, it's really temporary housing, obviously. You know, it's just about 10 square feet long. And so, again, there's two. It's better than the tents because the problem right now is that the monsoons are going to arrive beginning May. While I was there already, the intermonsoons were happening, which means that every evening we actually had the rains. But I can't imagine what that must be once the monsoons start, beginning of May, with their daily rains from morning till evening, up until September. You can imagine what's going to happen with the people who are sitting in those tents there, you know, on the ground, not really protected for mud. I can only imagine that it will increase the really misery that's going to happen to these people and the increased amount of disease that we're going to be meeting there. Unfortunately, I must say about all the money that has been promised and basically what we hear about it, how many millions of dollars that have been offered, even when I left there, unfortunately, the government was still discussing where to bring the money. Well, I can tell you where to bring it. Well, I was, that's for sure. And people there really complained and, in fact, were protesting openly on the roads that no money was coming to them and nothing was really done. And I can clearly see, and even the government there in Sri Lanka is actually acknowledging it, that it's going to take them 2 to 4 years before anything will come back to normal. So this is not a situation that's over yet. Very unfortunately, for the people who really lost everything what they had, many fisher people, they lost their boats, of course. That means no more, you know, income from there, no more income at all. And then other people who really were depending on agriculture, you know, the sea coming in there, this 30 feet waves, and they're leaving and staying there for about 30 minutes, on their land really has kind of made that land just unmanageable for further cultivation at this point. So those people, too, have a problem right now, which was easily seen in the hotels that we were, where, you know, certain foods or yogurt or anything could not be obtained from the farmers, even though 3 months later after this particular tragedy.
Luke, you know, I know that the initial tsunami, of course, caused a tremendous amount of destruction, and I'm sure you saw some horrific situations there. I'm curious, I know the monsoons have not started in that part of the world yet. I don't know if you know much about this. Do you know if they're dealing with sanitation issues in terms of, because I would assume once the typhoon, the rain starts, that we're going to have, they're going to have all kinds of diseases, waterborne diseases. Do you know much about
it? Yeah, well, there is no doubt about it. Well, there's one good thing. The Red Cross has done an excellent job of giving, you know, potable water everywhere. So that's one good thing. I mean, that's available. It was a blessing for our treatments, too. I can just imagine that, indeed, once this monsoon is going to start, and as I said, most of those people there are not really not even in temporary housing, you know, little houses, the wooden houses, so they are still in their tents. I can really see that besides, of course, obviously the increased colds and flus and coughs and whatever you want, that indeed this might become a problem because, you know, not to mention, by the way, that the fear of people is great, because while I was there at one point, it was just a normal event, but then never again. It just freaked everybody out. Another wave came actually over from the sea, over the street, over the road which runs along the sea, and panicked everybody out right there and then. Not to mention, by the way, of course, with that second earthquake, I was already gone at that point, that, you know, shook Sumatra almost from the same place, and thank God not really caused another tsunami. But certainly, what you mentioned, Kim, I can only imagine that the problems, medical, will increase. And I must say one thing about this, too. What I can see, and that's another problem, is that many countries, of course, as this gets out of the news, that's just normal. You know how people are. You know, they move on to, you know, newspapers and TVs. They move on to more, you know, recent news and more, you know, whatever news that catches the people's eyes and ears. I can just see that some of the NGOs or anything like that now start withdrawing, and I don't know about the continuation of medical care, how that will play out there, and that's certainly one of my concerns, to see that, you know, people really stay there for a month at the most, and then basically there's no follow-up anymore, very little follow-up in these organizations. So that certainly is going to add that to the problem with the you know, with this particularly problem that you just say about the monsoons, that is going to increase the suffering of these people, in my opinion.
Luke, I can imagine that they're, you know, not practicing in a third world country like that, especially after devastation, that it was quite difficult. There must have been some challenges that you encountered. Can you maybe tell us a little bit about some of the things that were difficult for the homeopaths to work with?
Yeah, but the challenges, I would say, are not so much on my homeopathic world, but more on, you know, what I really usually not encounter. And, you know, the biggest challenge, the biggest difficulty for us homeopaths to work there is, of course, the language. And now I speak five languages fluently, but, you know, there's none of them I can be of any help. Obviously, in Colombo, you know, everybody speaks English, or most people speak English. But once you go down to this tourist area, because it was a tourist area 3 hours south, you know, the Sinhalese is a total different language, and it's extreme. No, you know, you can't understand one word of it. So that is a very number one problem that we as homeopaths encounter. I mean, I was in South Africa, I was in Kenya. I mean, the children, when they're 2, 3 years old, they speak English, so no problem. So why is this a difficulty? Well, obviously because we as homeopaths, even more than allopaths, I would say, we depend on a good history intake. I'm not talking about little injuries like trauma, you know, bruises or cuts or whatever, infected wounds, but I'm talking about more the long-term chronic disease consequences now of the tsunami. We certainly want to have a good history taken, and I can assure you that it's very, very difficult to find a good translator. I mean, I was lucky. No, I was very lucky. First of all, I had a young man who was born in England, but who was born from two parents of Sri Lanka, and who spoke the language fluently. He actually came to my help from the second day on already. Sumudu was his name, a wonderful young guy who studies for a lawyer, so since then my opinion about lawyers has highly increased. And he was there just to help me. And he was absolutely delighted to be with us because, you know, he is intelligent, he could speak the language. Other people we had to depend on, like people from the tourist area, well, they really do not know that much English, enough like where is the bank and here is the beach. But once you start asking questions like, even a simple question, I can assure you, how long is this already lasting, this particular ailment? First you hear 3 months, and before you know it became 3 years when you ask a second time. So, you know, they told me those questions are too technical, too hard. I mean, I was lucky with other people, and they said we had a translator that also was available for the first group of homeopaths. Vicky was his name. Unfortunately, when I came there, he was actually taken in the hospital with prostate cancer for an operation, and I couldn't really use him for at least 10 days, very unfortunately, because he was an excellent elderly gentleman, very gentle, and he spoke rather good English. And then, of course, I had a wonderful lady, Shirani, who was a teacher in the school, one of the schools there, But since he was a teacher, she was not available, you know, until from 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon on until about 7, at which time every woman, every young woman, even when you're 30 years old, not married, is supposed to be at home and not on the street anywhere else. So you can see this became a problem, and I think this is the greatest problem we're going to encounter even in the future, to find somebody who really can translate what we need to ask. And even the person we left there, Evie, was a wonderful homeopath from South Africa, even has still that frustration to some extent. So that's definitely the number one problem. And again, two, I have my solutions for it, but maybe later I can talk about it. The other problem was, of course, the transportation. Obviously, for NGO groups or groups like the Red Cross and other groups that are well-paid and well-funded, $30 a day is not really much of money to pay for a taxi and run around everywhere. I mean, for us nowadays, it's a lot of money. I mean, we think about what Homeopaths Without Borders does with little money, does an excellent job, and we are very aware of that, and we just don't want to spend money where we wouldn't have to spend it. Obviously, there are these little three-wheelers, but the three-wheelers are a danger on the road. I can assure you, these are such small roads, and we had these big buses, and then the three-wheelers, and then cars, and then bikes, and then pedestrians all running in as fast as they could, and I have never seen any country where it was so dangerous to drive, because otherwise I probably have rented a car and drive myself. But there's no way that any foreigner, I think, can just come there and get on the street without being killed in the next 5 minutes. I was always joking with the taxi person and say, you probably check with my wife if my life insurance is active, right? And he always laughed, and just then before I knew it, we had to hold on, and they were storming left and right as fast as they could. So, you know, that's a little bit of a difficulty, number one, finding somebody who doesn't want to charge you, too much, basically, because don't forget, as usual, you know, a catastrophe like this brings the best and the worst out of people. And certainly the one that helped the previous group of homeopaths was one of the worst ones that I met right away, and I didn't want to deal with him because he clearly told me, I don't care that you come and help my people here, it's business. And, you know, he wanted to charge me more than he charged tourists. So, you know, it's a very unfortunate thing, but I guess I'm not surprised about this. This is, you know, worldwide. It's not just in Sri Lanka. You know, the best and the worst comes from people. So I would say those two problems must be addressed, and there's certainly one other problem is, of course, that we must have, in order to be more efficient, we must have more of a stable base, and I can talk maybe later about that.
Very interesting. Look, my understanding is that Sri Lanka, unlike India, the government is very anti-homeopathy, so I was curious if you were able to, if there was cooperation going on between the homeopaths and the allopaths.
I'm not sure if they are very anti-homeopath, but there is about two groups of homeopaths right now in Sri Lanka. There's two foundations there, and they don't come along. I guess that's another worldwide phenomenon, I guess, unfortunately. And basically, they still have to kind of prove indeed to the government their value, without any doubt. They are tolerated, but certainly they are not really in a position, like you say, like they are in India, where it's really, you know, very much respected. And the only thing that you see much in Sri Lanka is Ayurveda medicine, which is everywhere, and especially in the area where we were, you can see Ayurvedic medicine. The doctor's care itself, the allopathic care, now the Sri Lankan allopathic care, I think, was also, from what I could see, not too highly, effective. And even the sad thing is that even on places where we went and where there were allopathic doctors from foreign countries, like from Czechoslovakia or anywhere else, England, Australia, they even had a hard time getting the cooperation of the doctors, the allopathic doctors of Sri Lanka. You know, for us, of course, the cooperation, the possible cooperation of homeopathy with allopathy is not that easy. I mean, not because the people didn't want to. In other words, don't misunderstand me. The foreign medical allopathic doctors that were there, where we came, were very helpful, and they certainly didn't stop us from doing any work. But I'm looking at if we are working, for instance, in the same camp, if you would be working in Piralia camp is that camp where that train is, you know, the train was standing right now, and where really, you know, the main activity of the allopathic resource was and help was, well, we said it doesn't make sense for us to work side to side next to them because, you know, people come there with rashes and whatever, and, of course, eczema, and you know what allopathy is going to do. They're just going to suppress it, and then we actually have to say, no, we're going to do the opposite. You know, it doesn't make any sense. In other words, for us, it's much more important, which we did, of course, as well as the previous homeopaths, to go to our own sites and try to establish help somewhere else in places that are more interesting to look at it. And that's what we really did. So, again, there's two. What I saw from the allopathic doctors, by the way, as much as I saw it, is that their main therapy was bandaging everybody, cuts and bruises and everything like this, and, you know, and creams and antibiotics, and that's about it. In a way, it wasn't very, you know, again, I'm sure they had the same difficulties as we had communicating with these people, and certainly when they tried to do studies, for instance, I'll give you an example, which is almost laughable if it wasn't that serious, about the psychology, about the children, you know, maybe, you know, traumatized by this tsunami. I read in the newspaper, in the local newspaper, that a whole group of English psychotherapists came there for a whole month to work with the children, you know, about it. And then at the end of the month, want them to draw a picture about, you know, their traumatized ideas about what happened with the tsunami. And these children were just sitting there for a whole hour and didn't know what to do. At the end, the psychotherapists were so traumatized themselves, I guess, this time, and so frustrated that they drew the pictures themselves and then filmed it. And that was, of course, the whole extent of their help. And it's kind of sad in a way, you know, when one has to read these kind of things and there is so much to do, you know. But again, it's not just the people that us who want to help us, I would say one thing. Before we would go anywhere else in any part of the country, it's a good idea for us to get a little bit familiar, I think, with, you know, the people's habits, their customs, how they really, you know, talk to us, because that by itself would make it much more understandable and of course, again, too, would make it more feasible for us to communicate with them. And I must say, at least homeopathy has a little bit of a step before everybody else.
Look, I know when you went there and we had spoken a little bit, you had mentioned to me that you were going to you know, bring homeopathic software and that you especially wanted to make sure that you had the Bossier, Benninghausen repertory. And so I thought maybe you could share a little bit with us about what specifically it was about that repertory that you thought was so essential in this particular
situation. Yeah, that's a good question, Kim. And first of all, I thank you for providing me with that computer program and absolutely and the computer. And really, it was gratefully appreciated.
At least we could all do, yeah.
Yeah, I tell you one thing. As you just said, and that really follows this particular question very well up, as I just said, you know, people come to you with hard time to, first of all, to understand them. And certainly people in Sri Lanka are not right away open, certainly to foreigners, I don't know what to do with their own doctors, to talk about their emotional problems. They certainly know, if we know the von Bernhausen method, one of those five methods that I teach my students, and we know that it's mainly based on modalities, you know, what makes it better, what makes it worse, you know, the concomitant symptoms, what symptoms go with it, you know, location, sensation, and only at the end do we actually use a little bit of the emotions, which normally is, of course, the most important. Only at the end do we do that with von Bernhausen to make a differential diagnosis between two or three top remedies that we have in mind. Then you can understand that this is absolutely, if anywhere else, obviously I love this method anywhere, but certainly in a tribal country, certainly in Sri Lanka, where people are really refrained and have a hard time talking to you what emotions they go through. You know, I guess they're not used to it. You know, they're Buddhists, first of all. Most of them are Buddhism, you know, and I heard many people say they're, you know, even children, well, you know, we eat the sea and the sea eat us. That's how they look at it. And really, even children who lost their parents could talk very calmly about it. I was surprised by this. You know, they weren't really totally traumatized, and it doesn't mean that none of them were traumatized. Believe me, I have examples enough too. But certainly the children seem to be very happy, always my happiness to see those children too. So the von Bünhausen method in this particular case is absolutely fantastic to really make a differential diagnosis when once you have some modalities. Modalities are not really difficult to get from people. You know, it's a very different question to ask them, is it worse when you move it or in rest, and versus, you know, what do you feel emotionally? You know, people are certainly inclined to answer these questions much faster, and it's certainly easier to answer them too. So, you know, again, I would probably say to anybody, even this, and this is for acute as well as chronic cases, just learn the von Bünhausen method whenever you can. It certainly will be a great, fantastic method to add to your practice, not just in Sri Lanka, also here in the United States.
Luke, you must have seen quite a variety of different types of things, different types of cases there. Could you maybe tell us a little bit about what you actually saw and what type of success you were able to achieve with the cases that you did see?
Yeah, we must make a difference between, first of all, tsunami-related and non-tsunami-related events. Certainly, as we go longer away and have more distance between the 26th of December and our presence, you know, there'll be also many non-tsunami-related illnesses without any doubt, which is fine with us, obviously. And so, besides the, even 3 months later, besides the regular bruises and infections and skin disorders, which of course happened, by the way, when people, as they were telling us, were running away with their children on their shoulders, you know, and in their hands, and of course they couldn't outrun the speed of such tsunami. They were just dashed left and right. So, you know, we got quite a bit of those, you know, without any doubt, you know, trauma related to the tsunami. But of course, there's also many other things. And here is, of course, the difficulty for us, too, that we must make sure that we can give a continuation of the treatment. You know, it's not enough to come there once on a place and give a remedy. The follow-up, of course, must be done. And that's why when I was there with my group, with George and Evie, we tried to go back about every 2-3 days to the previous places where we were. Here again, too, I must say, some people came back, some people didn't come back, and after we heard, they didn't come back because they were better. You know, in fact, we were lucky. At one point, we asked this little boy who was always getting bottles for me, well, do you know this person? He said, yeah, that's my aunt. I said, well, go get her. She had a frozen shoulder for 3 months since the trauma. So he got her, and this lady, although I asked her to come back 2 days later, didn't come, but once she came with her little nephew, she was smiling over the place and throwing her arms in the air and swinging in her arms, saying, look how good it is. So, well, at least I guess some of those never came back because they were good. Other people, I must say, probably don't come back because they're not used to have this kind of support, medically, that is. And anyway, some of the cases I saw, depending where we were, you know, let's just start even in a hotel. Once I was at the hotel where we stayed, the Reef Hotel, at one point a German lady came to me and said to me, I heard you're homeopath. Can you do something about this? And show me her hands. She was a German lady, a tourist, who was filming all day long. And both hands were actually blistered from sunburn, now second-degree burns. And I said, sure. Well, it's easy enough. Those are the easy things for us. I gave her a dose of Costicum. Of course, the fifth edition method, and I said, by tomorrow, come and show it to me. Well, you couldn't believe it, but by the next morning, it was totally cured, which totally took her by surprise. And, of course, from then on, we had many different people from the hotel itself, starting from the chef, you know, and George had a good case with him, to the big guy, you know, who was there, to the manager. Everybody had something, and so that was actually our, not our first one, but in the meantime, they helped us immensely, especially the chef, to send us to some places. Then we went, of course, to villages where the previous homeopaths were, and so many cases, again, too, ranging from traumas to asthma to even interesting cases, you know, because again, there's two. Sometimes they don't tell you the whole story. I just give you an idea. I had a woman there. She said, well, she has headaches since 2 years, you know, for which she took paracetamol every day. And there's always a secret story behind it, of course. You know, her headaches were always worse with light, with noise, but it started since she had to change jobs 2 years ago. Because she lost her husband, she was financially supported by a brother, and then she had to work hard in the fields because the brother could not support her anymore, and with 3 children she needed to make good money. And then, of course, she could do this for 2 years, and then this free-looking woman had to take a smaller job, got less paid, and that's when the headache started. So you can clearly see all this, and this face and anxiety, fearful poverty, which, of course, she has. And then she had 2 children that hardly talked to her and how much she missed them as part of her home, as she expressed, you know, here comes home, desires to go home. I knew this was Bryonia. And so, again, it was a very moving story because as we started with a stoic woman talking about her headache, when she was telling her story, prompted my questions to Shirani, my wonderful translator, she was very much crying. And here again, too, I gave some of the money that was given to me by wonderful people like Kelly and Eric Burt and the Florida Homeopathic Society. I want to really thank them. Certainly give money to those people. I just want you to know that your money came in the right hands, and people really were crying. I was really very much moved by this. You know, there are other places where we went, orphanages, you know, again, to where the previous homeopaths were gone. There, too, we only went once because I really didn't feel that much could be done. First of all, the children that were there were extremely sick, some congenital heart diseases, secondary syphilis. We did some things, of course, there. You know, there were cysts that were infected, and we actually gave remedies for that. But there was the presence of a Czechoslovakian team, doctor's team. They were very kind. It's not that. But mainly, again, there too, we did not know if our remedies were going to be given further. And I certainly, there was one of the previous homeopathic teams that had been there, and I could find his remedies all untouched there. So, again, too, if we wouldn't go there all the time, we don't really know. And it was not much to do there, so that was one of the reasons I didn't go back. But we went to another place that were that are still in place right now and really good. One was called the House of Incurables. It's a bad name, I find. I would have rather given it a different name. But it turned out to be a place where 50% of the people, children, many children too, were actually mentally retarded. And then, of course, we saw some other things like severe bed wounds, severe bed sores. You know, one was so severe that he had to be hospitalized later. I mean, you could see the femur through the bed sore, just to give you an idea how severe it was. We saw the children that actually were affected by the tsunami and had seizures since the tsunami, typical stramonium seizures, illness from fright. We had their diarrhea cases, you know, an alloy diarrhea case, I remember. So it was very, again, very wonderful to go there because people were very grateful, and basically there was no help right there except the nurse who was there for 14 days, and she did the best she could, but she had to, you know, buy her own supplements. Then I think the best place we had was in Sinigama, which was closer to where I was in Hikaduwa, and it was called the Rainbow Clinic. It was actually made about a month before I came there by 3 American doctors, but it was on the grounds of a Sri Lankan benefactor, actually a wonderful man who had already there a whole history of doing something for the Sri Lankan people, one of the few I met, and he was all destroyed, by the way, what he had done too, but now he turned this into a place where he was making stones for the houses around it, and he actually had made a clinic too. It was there that I met, you know, one of the cases that touched me the most, I must say, you know, it was a German doctor there, a wonderful German doctor, orthopedic surgeon, and his wife was actually dabbling a little bit in homeopathy, so certainly they welcomed us with open arms, and while I was there, a lady, an older lady, maybe 80 years old, came walking from 2 hours away, walking in the heat. Now, it is 92 degrees and 95% humidity, just to give you an idea. And she came walking with a broken arm, and you could clearly see, not set. She never had an x-ray, was never set. She just had this bandage around it. It was almost totally dirty. I must say this. I mean, I called my friend, the German orthopedic, said, this is certainly up into your alley here. And he had some plaster, which was great. And I must say, I have never seen anything alike, but when he was maneuvering her hand, and of course what I did to assist him, I gave her right away a one embryonia in water, sequestered it 100 times and make her drink half cup. And it helped her because I could see that, you know, while he was pushing her around and everything like that, she had pain, but she never cried one little yelp, I must say. It was really moving to see it. And once we were done, I helped the German doctor putting the plaster on. Once we were done, this beautiful lady, 80 years old, it really touched me. She kneeled to my knees, you know, she actually put her head on the floor, kneeled in front of me, and did the same to the German doctor. It was very moving, I must say. It's just unbelievable that there is such gratitude from such wonderful people. And she had her little granddaughter of 10 years old who accompanied her need to do the same thing, you know, bowing her head on the floor in front of us. It was just very moving, but certainly it's a wonderful thing. Just are some of the few cases, I can't tell you many more, that we have been seeing.
Luke, did you see something about the remedies? Did you have to bring your own remedies, or were the remedies provided, and was there an adequate supply? What was the story about?
Yeah, here is an excellent thing. Well, first of all, that gives me the opportunity to thank, the people who provided us with some remedies and natural health supplies. Jim Clemmer gave me a 1M kit. Again, a 100 remedy 1M kit. And Joe Lillard of Washington Homeopathic gave my friend George a 30C kit also along. So thanks again to both gentlemen for doing this for us. And I have my own 6C kit, 100 remedies also with me. So basically, I think anybody going there or any third world country, if you either have a 6C, 100 remedies and a 200C or 1M, 100 remedies along, here is a perfect way of applying the fifth edition method. Now, I read from the previous group, the first group of homeopaths that were there, that they had at the end that they had to really be running short of remedies because, you know, they were giving the dry method, the fourth edition dry method, which is, you know, 3 pellets here, 3 pellets there, so that they had to cut it even to 1 pellet at the end. Well, this was never a problem. I could have been there for the whole year, and I wouldn't have not have run out of remedies. Now, when I came there, and in fact, it's too bad, again, that the first group did not know the fifth edition split method. When I came in Colombo, and I talked to my friend Joe de Oliveira, our benefactor there in Colombo, he said to me, oh, that's not going to work, your method. They don't have bottles. He said, well, just watch me. Well, I can tell you one thing. The first word I learned in Sinhalese was bottle, and that means bubble. And I can assure you, everybody brought me a bottle. So it was just a wonderful way of, here again, first of all, giving remedies along in a bottle, easy to explain to people how to take it, and, you know, they had remedies with them, and there's no way we would ever run out of remedies, obviously. You know, we only have to put 1 pellet in a bottle of water, and I had about at least 1,000 pellets in each little bottle that I had. Not to mention, obviously, that the results are much quicker with the fifth edition method and the side effects, similar aggravations are certainly also a lot less. So I would say this is a great way of introducing homeopathy to people. They are more used to it. They drink it from the bottle. And certainly I became Dr. Bottle in Sri Lanka, as I'm known right there now.
Fantastic. You know, Luke, I know that Homeopathy Without Borders really has done a tremendous job in terms of organizing, coordinating this whole project for us to go over there and help the people who are basically suffering the consequences of the tsunami. I'm curious if you could kind of give us some ideas of what we could do to even improve what they've done already.
Yeah, that's no doubt about it. I want to thank Nancy Kelly and Homeopaths Without Borders for supporting us and you know, again, getting the funds from everybody else to really do what we can do. What we should do, you know, it's not easy. You know, we have to learn as we go without any doubt, and we can learn off from the two groups that have been there already now. First of all, we need to report to Nancy, the head of the Homeopaths Without Borders, you know, again, what should be done and not be done. It was difficult for the first group when they came there, again, too, because of the language problem, too, I'm sure, to establish somewhere a place where to start. You know, you're dropped in the middle of nowhere, and they say, where are the patients? You know, it isn't like they are standing on the street waiting for you. So it's a difficulty for them, and certainly the first group of homeopaths too, if I can speak for them, the first week they had difficulties. It took them about a week to know where to go and where to find patients, so to speak. Because again, Sri Lankan people are a proud people. I mean, I even heard in stories where builders, when a great group of builders were turned away from villages where all the houses were in ruins. So it is a strange thing that, you know, incomprehensible maybe to us, but again, there too, what do we know about the Sri Lankan people? I certainly don't say that. So certainly what I see what we need to do, first of all, which we did, of course, we're trying to say, well, if anybody else goes after us, make sure that this and this and this is known. And no, not just about the language, but here are the places where we were, here are the places we established. And I think in order for us to be not in vain, to do all this work in vain, all this months that we have been there now, what we need to try to establish is some kind of a permanent place, a permanent base where people would know that we are going to be there all the time and that we come there on a regular basis. We were lucky, by the way, the second group, no, we were lucky to establish the, you know, the Rainbow Clinic to go in there. We didn't establish it, but we were accepted there. And certainly for me, that's probably the one that has the biggest future. Also, Evie, who is still there, now part of our group, has now talked to Gale in Gale, the other city, to a big, a new hotel, and most likely it's possible that she might now get a room there for free and maybe establish a clinic there that is more permanent. So that for us, again, there's two, is the reason that we should go there. I mean, I came 1 week earlier back than I thought so, because simply for the reason that there was not enough work for the three of us. You know, there's no reason for us to spend the money of homeopaths without borders when one person could do it. And after 14 days, we had established enough, and Evie right now, with whom I am still in contact every day, is doing an excellent job by herself at this point. So, you know, rather, you know, this allows Homeopaths Without Borders to pay a little bit more for her longer stay, which is much more important, again, that we have a more continuous presence. It's very sad, and here I must say, a sad thing, that the homeopaths in Sri Lanka, who are there, two groups there, have not given us not once the slightest help, not once. They were not present there to help their own people. They were not present there to help us with translation or transport, which they could easily be done. So this is another thing I would probably say to Homeopaths Without Borders here in the United States, is to really be in contact or get in contact with these people, with the homeopathic groups there, two groups there, in order to, you know, if anything, to really say, look, help us. We need help. We need help in transport, especially in translation more than anything else. And they could learn something from us, because the homeopaths there, the homeopathic education is very poor in Sri Lanka itself. So, you know, everybody would be a winner. The patients, we would be, and they would be. So I think this is the thing that I would really, you know, and hopefully we can stay there for some time, and Evie is certainly staying still there. And I'm sure that Nancy will look at all the reports that she is getting from the previous homeopaths and us to even establish, hopefully, even a longer presence for us there. And I certainly wouldn't hesitate to go back when I would have another opportunity later in the year.
Luke, I see we're getting short on time here, so I just wanted to say, do you want to thank anybody for all the support that you received going there?
Yeah,
and
well,
also
I really thank you, and certainly for the computer. I thank Nancy for what she was doing, and National Health Supply, Daniel Chapter 1 for giving me some support. I definitely want to thank my friends, you know, Eric and Kelly Birch, who helped me with money, and especially a very special thank to the Homeopathic Medical Association, who actually gave me money while I was there in February in their yearly conference, and they really went around wonderfully. I never forget these beautiful people in Florida who went around, and there was this little wonderful girl who went around with a little pot, and they gave me cash money along. I just want to tell them that money went into the right hands. I have seen many tears in the eyes, and I have to thank you, all of you, for making that possible.
Luke, if people want to donate to Homeopathy Without Borders, can you provide that information for people?
Yeah, they can send a check to Homeopathy Without Borders from North America, and that's P.O. Box 1550. It's called Basalt, B-A-S-A-L-T, Basalt, Colorado, 81621.
Luke, I want to personally thank you on behalf of the homeopathic community and homeopathy in general for, again, doing this call, but even more importantly, taking a month out of your incredibly busy schedule to go over there and to, you know, serve these people who have experienced historically the worst natural disaster that humanity has ever experienced. So I think what you've done is really, on behalf of the homeopathic community, is tremendous, and I want to personally thank you. I think that everyone on this call must be tremendously appreciative of you going and representing us in this way. So thank you so much, really.
And I want to thank my friends George Strom and Evie Dilchis for being with me, by the way. I don't want to forget them for being helpful with me and, you know, and giving me the support I really wanted.
Thank you very much, Luke. Before I unmute and allow people to ask their own questions, let me just reiterate again that Dr. Luke will be conducting a 5-day seminar in Albuquerque, New Mexico, titled Beyond Jung, Dreams, Delusions, and Neurosis, a Homeopathic Approach to the Similimum. This is running from August 17th through the 21st. That's a Wednesday through a Sunday. And if people want information on that, they can contact Dr. Luke at Dr. Luke, that's D-R-L-U-C, at cybermesa.com. I personally attended a seminar like this. It was a shorter one, a 2-day one. It was tremendous. So if you have an opportunity to go and see Dr. Luke in Albuquerque, you won't regret it. Also, Dr. Luke will be in Ottawa, and the information on that I had here a second ago. Aha, here it is. The title of the seminar is 9 Questions and Answers to Resolve Even the Most Difficult Cases in Management. If you want information on that seminar, that'll be May 21st through the 22nd. You can contact Liz Henderson at the British Institute of Homeopathy. The phone number is 613-749-9762. And the website for that is www.bihcanada.com. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and unmute the lines. Luke, thank you again, and let's open it up.
Hi, questions? Dr. Luke, this is Janice Mancini.
Hi, Janice.
How are you? I'm curious. Somebody that I went to nursing school with is over on a ship, and she's been emailing us, telling us about her experience over there. And one thing that struck me was that she kept talking about these bizarre cancers that she saw, lots and lots of strange cancer. And I wondered what if you saw any of that and what your thoughts are.
Okay, Sri Lanka, you mean?
Yeah, Banda Aceh?
I don't know. That must be on the East Coast, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's on the East Coast.
Okay, so you didn't see any of that?
No, because, you know, first of all, that's the side of the East Coast that was dangerous.
And Indonesia.
He's probably on a boat because it was too dangerous to go on land. I haven't seen any of those particularly cancers, not anything abnormal besides, you know, what one usually sees, let's put it this way.
Okay, thank you.
And we'd also like to ask Dr. Luke about his trip to Sri Lanka.
I have a question. Speaking about the method of putting the remedies in water, I'm wondering, do you have any suggestions? Because I'm planning to do some work in Mexico as far as carrying homeopathic medicines. As long as I have a kit of the different potencies, I can use whichever bottles I find there and fill them up with clean water.
Well, that's a good question. So, again, too, you know, you being in Mexico, again, I would say to you, take one kit of 60 for your chronic cases, you know, and if you have 100 remedies, that's plenty. Even if you had 50, probably is pretty good. And one kit of 200C or 1,000C for your acute cases. And then you should apply the 50-distance split method, by the way. I'm sure even in Mexico, you can get bottles and water. I mean, even I was in Kenya in a village, I mean, 500 miles away from any civilized area, and, you know, even there I could get bottles and anything else. You know, again, there's two. You don't have to be afraid of contamination or something. Again, you can find bottles anywhere, you know, even, like I said, in Kenya or in Sri Lanka where I was. So I would tell you just to learn the 50 distance split method, because your results will be much quicker. People like the method, you know, they know how to apply it, and the aggravations are definitely much less lasting, if non-present, even when, once you know how to do it very well.
Luke, but maybe you would be kind enough in the future to maybe do a call specifically on the split dose method, because it seems to me that a lot of people are not familiar with it. I'd like to just mention for those of you on the call who don't know much about the split dose method that Dr. Luke, in his most recent book, Achieving and Maintaining the Similimum, goes over that approach, which I agree with him is an excellent, excellent approach in very great detail. So if you want to know more about that, definitely get his latest book, Achieving and Maintaining the Similimum.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Yeah, a friend of mine wanted me to ask, how soon are you going to be able to inform us on what particular remedies that would help cure the flu for this coming winter?
Already, the one has been present this winter, we already know since November, and this was Nux vomica, obviously. You know, Nux vomica was the genus epidemicus, which was known, like I said, I knew it in November. In effect, I think Kim Webb had a call at that time, and actually we mentioned it at that point in November. So Nux vomica, without any doubt, is the preventive and the curative remedy of this year's flu epidemic. It's amazing because, you know, that particular remedy imitates very much Bryonia or Caribic, and I'm sure people have been giving Bryonia and Caribic, but certainly Nux vomica covered all the symptoms of Bryonia and Caribic, plus, of course, it had the typical Nux vomica symptoms of, besides fatigue, of disturbance with food, nausea, vomiting, and absolute lack of appetite. So it's a little bit late at this point. We should be getting out of the flu season at this point. And I don't think there's that many new cases coming along. And, of course, for the next year, we'll have to wait. I would say, you know, once comes October next year, what everybody should do in the homeopathic world, and it's easy enough with the great support of my students that I have, and thanks to them, too, by the way, for contributing to Homeopathia Laboris. You know, thanks to this great group, we know very quickly once the flu starts anywhere, because we only need about 10, 15 cases, and we can determine the genus epidemicus of the that particular year, which is, of course, fantastic to prevent and cure the flu and, of course, keep us away from those awful flu shots that we just want to avoid at any cost.
Fantastic. Okay, I think we have time left for one last question. One final question?
Yeah, who wants to come along?
Hello.
On my next trip.
Hello.
My next trip is to
How
China.
How about me?
George, go ahead.
This is George. I want to thank you, personally thank you, Dr. Luke, for a very good presentation.
I have one question about the lady with the broken arm.
Yes.
Did you send her some phytum with her for later?
Yeah, of course, yeah, indeed. After giving her Bryonia, I gave her indeed some phytum along in the bottle, of course, in the bottle, the famous bottle. And I have never seen a more beautiful smile on anybody, more grateful lady as in her. And really, when I think about her, I'm still touched by her wonderful gestures and everything that she did. You know, I must say, it's never in vain. Just that alone would have been worth it for us to go there. And thank again, Homeopathia Laboris, and everybody else who contributed, my wonderful loyal students. Thank you very much for all your support. And, of course, you just when anything happens, just like my wife, just say, well, Dr. Luke, you should be there. I probably will be there.
Okay, so, Luke, thank you again. This was a wonderful call. Everyone can just give Luke a big thank you for being an ambassador for all of us going over there.
I just want to say, too, that for one, it was worth it, but it sounds like you helped many.
Absolutely, and it was just worth it. Like I said,
yes.
If you have one person, it's worth it. Just keep that all in mind. Everything is worth it.
Thank
you. Take care, everybody.